Hey guys, welcome to episode 136 of the podcast with my guest, young adult author Maureen Johnson. She's a total badass, so I hope you enjoy this episode. I wanted to just throw some shout outs in. I wanted to give a special shout out to Bara. Bara, what is up? I love that you're listening to the podcast, guys. This is a friend of mine. I want to thank for your marvelous email, Philip. Thank you for that and for giving a special shout out to Julian and his episode. I want to give a shout out to Robin in the UK. Thanks for representing in England. I had to think about what the UK was for a second. Guys, I know what it is. Come on. It's also not just England. Listen, we don't have to talk about this right now. I don't need to get into geography. I am woefully, woefully poor at that anyway. For your emails, Merida, thank you so much. Natalie, thank you. Grace, thank you for your marvelous email. And Alicia, JV Club member, woo-woo! I think that's it, guys. I'm just deep in Sketchfest mode, as you know. Looking forward to hopefully seeing some of you at the festival this year. We've got a ton of great stuff. Really excited about it. I almost burped, but guys, I was able to hold it in for this intro. That's a big feat on my part. I hope you enjoy the episode, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I think that means we can probably get started.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Do you have it in you?
Yeah, just about. This is the first work thing. I mean, I'm just put that in quotes that I've done in like 6 weeks, really. So,
and would you like to tell the kind listeners why that is, or would you like it to keep it our special secret?
I'll talk about it just because it's all I've talked to. Like, I have nothing else. I've had nothing else to do but talk. You know, when you get sick, you have nothing else to do. So you just, sure.
So what befell you? And also, I was thinking about this. Now, this is classic Varney, by the way.
Wait,
I asked you
started?
A question.
Is this it?
Yeah, we're full on started.
Oh, wow.
I know. Do you want to let it sink in while I talk? Because what I was about to excuse myself for was classic Varney is like, why don't you tell us about, and then I won't let you talk. I'll just tell you.
I'll just keep talking. Yeah.
Oh boy. It's really self-serving. No, but I had to drop my dogs off to get a bath. And, on the way back, I was thinking about you thinking about talking to you and thinking about, kind of what you've been going through and thinking about myself and the fact that every time something bad happens to me, quote unquote bad, whatever, you know, especially if it's a health thing, I always feel like, you know, sometimes when the best things happen to you and you realize that from the outside, people are kind of gilding it in a way that it doesn't quite feel when it's happening to you, like it doesn't feel as great as when you see it happen to someone else. Mm-hmm. But I also think that the flip side of that for me has been that when something bad happens to me, it's never as bad as it seems from the outside. Do you know what I mean? And then have you found that to be true?
Yeah, a bit. I'm very fortunate in that I'm usually pretty healthy. But I do seem to have ridiculous... In this, I've had pretty ridiculous luck. So I've had a few – I seem to have ridiculous health luck occasionally. Like for example, as a kid, I got measles, like which nobody does. But I got measles.
You did it.
I did at my senior prom. I got measles.
What? You got it at your senior prom?
Yeah, that's what they did it back to. And it was like whatever – I forget what the incubation period is, but they counted it back. And they're like, yep, that's your prom. So yeah, and they were like, you have measles. That's bizarre. They wanted to just put me in the hospital, not because I was sick, but just to have so the medical students could just come and look at me because they're like, no one gets measles. We just want to look at you. And I was like, okay. So
what I'm first of all, I want to quickly give a shout out to Paul F. Tompkins because I seem to remember from his episode that we decided that measles and mumps both sounded like movie candy.
I think I've
lots of measles.
That was I've heard every episode of yours, so I am it's like you have called the super fan who's like, yes.
Oh, yeah. Maureen Johnson, I can't believe it. But what were the measles like?
Was it like chicken pox?
I've never had chicken pox. That's the other weird thing, is I seem to be naturally immune to chicken pox. They tried to give it to me and I couldn't get it. As I remember it, I just got really sick all of a sudden. It was like my senior year of high school and it was AP exam time. And I got these high fevers. And my mother is a nurse. My mother being a nurse is like a key component of my life. I don't understand how people live if my mom's not a nurse or a doctor. Like, my mom keeps my whole family alive. My mom has been like, she's like, you know, Dr. Quinn medicine woman. Like, you know, she's sort of, it's the reason that like whole groups of people we know are alive is because of my mother. But she was looking at me and all of a sudden I rash on the chest, shot up the face. You know, and she was like, holy, she knew what she was looking at. And she was like, you have measles. Like, this is crazy. And they didn't know what to do at first. So they had to take me to a pediatrician because no one else had seen it. So you have photophobia and you have all this weird stuff that happens to you. I remember photophobia well because I just had it a week ago because
of something. What's photophobia? It sounds like you're afraid to get your picture taken.
I have that as well.
I have many of us do.
Lifelong photophobia. It's your eyes react very strongly to light, so you have to. So I had to go outside in like giant sunglasses. So I'm in a pediatrician's office in giant sunglasses and
you prima donna.
Mm-hmm, it was sexy. It gets even better because then they took me. It seemed like I was having trouble breathing. I didn't. It was just there's measles go down your throat. So they took me to the hospital and they were like, you have measles. We can't let you be around anyone else. And so they put me in the casting room, which was like this closet in the back.
Oh God.
And they were like, oh, and I, you know, I was feverish and everything. And they said, okay, we're going to move you down the hall to x-ray you. But first they wrapped me up so that like, they sort of wrapped me like a mummy. And then they went out in the hall and they said, you have to get all the children out of the hallway.
Oh, no.
And they took off.
I think you just described how Michael Jackson spent most of his life.
Exactly.
Wrapped up like a mummy with sunglasses on. This is terrible.
And they get all the children out of the hallway. And then they took the gurney and they ran me down the hall. Far faster than you're supposed to go.
So dramatic.
It was so cool. And I, you know, when you're feverish, you're tripping balls as it is. And so you're like, what is happening? This is the greatest thing I ever accept. Everything is made of triangles and I can smell colors. So.
Oh my God. Okay. So God, there's like 18 things that I want to react to just based on that. And we haven't even gotten into what just happened to you recently. Of course, we're going to talk about your mom, but that really rang true for me because like literally yesterday, a friend of mine was saying, complaining about like, shooting pains in his head. And he was like, God, I really have to make friends with some doctors.
Yeah.
Like I live in a showbiz world where I don't know anyone that I can just call who's like, you know, my bicycling buddy who happens to be a physician that you can just call and casually say, hey, do you think I have a tumor if I'm having these shooting pains? And so it just makes me laugh that you just said what you said about your mom, because that is so something that has been in my mind recently is like, God, these people who just have buddies or family members who are medical practitioners, it seems like they won the lottery.
Yeah, my mom is kind of a super nurse. She's she was a nursing professor and she's a school nurse.
Oh, wow.
In a school that has a lot of technical shops. So there's like 5 automotive shops and three or four kitchens and 2 IU units of really seriously ill kids. Mm. And she's in charge of 1,100 students that have like, they cut off their fingers. She's like, oh, Maureen, these boys, they think they're so tough, but one finger and one machine and they go white and they just drop to the ground. She doesn't talk like that, but you know, it'd be great if she did.
Yes, it would.
Oh, my mom, and then she goes around and she bosses the other. Oh, she's nice though. She's very respectful, but when she turns on the nurse, stand back.
But don't we kind of want that? I mean, we kind of want that person. I mean, that's sort of, I don't want to get into the sort of gender specification here, but I think the idea of a kind woman who's also very, very much in charge is something that very few of us would object to in an emergency.
My mother is a flaming angel of compassion with a lot of technical knowledge. It's exciting.
That's so cool.
Yeah,
I think I might move in with her.
I don't know what to do. I've said to her, I'm like, I think I have to become a nurse because I don't know how any, like, someone has to carry this knowledge, right? Someone has to be that person. My friends end up calling her. My friend thought she was like, I think she thought she may have been having a heart attack. And so we called my mom. Like, we just called my mom.
That's great.
Yeah. I was on vacation and a woman on this little boat I was on thought she was having a heart attack. We called my mom from the boat. Like, we just called.
This is what I am talking about. I've got to get
you
in with your
mom.
You
can call my mom. Like,
she'll
hook you up.
Let's use that to segue into what happened this round. Was your mom the first person that you called, I'm assuming?
Well, you know, you know what? Now that I'm talking to you, I'm just backflipping through your previous podcast episodes. But it's spooky. But I was thinking a lot about the one you did with Kirsten Shaw about where she was talking about how she went in and all the things that happened to her. It was something similar. I had surgery. I have a women's medical issue that requires. Mm. Regular surgeries. It's not a big deal, but I have to have it done. Had it done 2 years ago. I just had it done again. And it really, the surgery itself is not that, it's not that bad. It's not a big deal. And I was fine. I got home and I was okay. And I was okay the next day. And then I just had this crazy fever and they were like, oh, it's, you know, probably just an inflammatory response. You have no other symptoms of anything. And then I was like, all right. And I just kept I was never right. Then other stuff started to happen. And then a week later, I just fainted in my living room. Ugh. And then we went over to Bellevue. We were close to there. So we went to Bellevue, which is where Bellevue is I wouldn't recommend going to the Bellevue ER. It is where I've just found out where they take, if people from Rikers are ill, they take them to. Yeah.
Adventure.
So there were a lot of people who were, you know, handcuffed to beds. Large police presence. They couldn't figure out what was wrong. They sent me home. I got worse. Things just kept happening. Then one night I got very ill and my heart just started going and going like a train.
Oh, man,
and I said, I think I have to go somewhere. So I went to an urgent care and I said, listen, I just need to get through that doorway. And I kind of got in the doorway and I slumped over the desk and I got in to see the doctor who just got this really funny look on her face as I was talking. And she was like, you need to lay back. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, I can't really talk because my, and she was like, I'm just going to call an ambulance.
Oh my God. Oh,
it's okay. We're just going to get you out of here as quickly as possible. And it's going to be, I was supposed to go to the movies with my friend that night. We were going to try to get me out for the first time. And instead of going to the movies, I texted her. I was like, haha, sorry. I'm at urgent care, maybe meet me. And as she arrived, I was being wheeled out on the gurney.
Jesus.
So, then they got me to the hospital, which was around the corner. And I was in the hospital. I was in the ER for 12 hours and they poked me and they prodded me and they did all kinds of, I had all kinds of exams at like 3 a.m. with so many hijinks. And then they admitted me and they said, well, we know you have an infection, but we don't really know where it is. So we're just going to start treating you. And they started giving me all these IV antibiotics. And then finally on the third day, they're like, okay, we think we found it. And none of those antibiotics treated it. You need this.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
So they gave me some antibiotic and I went home and I was still just as sick. And so I ended up back in the ER, this time with my agent who was visiting, who sat with me at 3 a.m. and sat with me actually during a pelvic exam and told me stories.
Oh, wonderful.
Awesome. She was very full service. And then they're like, you need more antibiotics. They gave me more antibiotics. And then they said, we don't really know what's wrong with you. We're sending you to an infectious disease specialist. Who was like house. Who was like, you need even more antibiotics. At this point, this is where my body seemed to break because they gave me this really strong antibiotic that seemed to do the job, but I stopped sleeping. I got palpitations all the time. Like, it really rocked me. And so it killed the infection, but there's something seems to still be going on. And they don't know if it's side effects from all like these six different antibiotics or they do think that perhaps the strain on my body reactivated some mono I had in 1992.
Oh, God. Oh,
so, yeah. I've had a lot of blood tests. And they said, or it's lupus.
No, for God's sake.
So I'm going to have a bunch of tests this week. It's probably not lupus. Also, the person that told me that was the doctor's secretary who called me the day after Christmas.
Oh, please.
Was like, oh, the doctor thinks you might have lupus. So, and I was like, you make the worst Christmas phone calls ever. So,
yeah. I would say that is a situation in which button up, secretary, and do not voice your opinion. And I agree with you. Lupus is so incredibly rare. I feel like it's incredibly unlikely. I'm sure it is. I can't even imagine. It's so taxing. Now, I do have to ask simple question. Let's make sure you are taking, have you taken probiotics, right? I mean, they're all kinds of little cultures that are going in as well.
Nurse mother made me, they didn't actually ever tell me to do that.
That's creepy to me.
But yeah, what I found is that things I didn't realize is that doctors fight with each other over their opinions of things. And there's, I thought there'd be more kind of general consensus of what was going on. And it turns out there isn't.
Well, that's, it's funny because I've been watching, and it's just so easy to take anyone's life and turn it into television. But I've been watching The Nick. Have you seen any of that? I wouldn't recommend that you do it right now.
No, it's the hospital one, right?
Yeah, it's the hospital one, like turn of the century sort of. And so, again, not a recommendation for you to watch right now. But when you're 100% well, but it's very much, the sort of reminder. And I've also been listening to the Stuff You Should Know podcast a little bit. And anytime, you're in a situation where you're being exposed to the way things used to be done and how barbaric it seems, I spend a lot of time lately kind of thinking like, oh, I'm so lucky to live in the time that I live in. But also when I hear stories like this, I think, we haven't really figured out still a lot of stuff. And it makes you wonder, in another 100 years, assuming we as a race make it, that, people are going to be like, can you believe they put her on 6 different antibiotics? That's crazy. Like, yeah. The stuff that we're still kind of troubleshooting and sort of crossing our fingers on is pretty like phenomenal.
Medicine is not a delicate art. It doesn't seem. Sometimes they're just like, let's just treat it with hammers. Like, let's just get a bunch of hammers and just hit stuff and see what happens. Ugh. And so, but it's still pretty good. Still pretty good. So I, instead of having this little operation that I thought I was going to be sort of up and about in 4 days, I've been more or less inside, just indoors for 6 weeks.
Oh my God.
I can sort of walk. What I have now, I'm just very fatigued. So right now I'm reclining I have a sofa bed in my office, and that's where I'm just very regal now. I'm trying to live like Auntie Mame or a Victorian.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like, I have all my...
You're allowed to get the vapors. You're allowed to put your hand, the back of your hand onto your forehead.
It's very civilized. I have tea and water and, I have my computer and my books and my reading. And it's not the worst thing. I'm trying to make the best of it. So.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Well, especially, and two, it sort of reminds me of like, if friends of mine who have been put on bed rest in difficult pregnancies, the same sort of idea of like trying to, and actually the difference being that, you aren't pregnant in a difficult pregnancy where you're also very, very uncomfortable during the bed rest.
Oh, did I not mention that? I'm also having a
very, I think you are a champ so I guess that takes us back to my initial question about this, which is what you've just described to me couldn't sound more horrible, and it triggers all sorts of kind of panic and anxiety about like how I feel when I think something might be wrong with me. I guess that takes me back to, do you think that this is a situation in which however someone imagines it, yes, it is absolutely that bad, if not worse? Or is it like, well, you know what? I got through it. It happened to me. And so I know exactly what it was to experience it. And so whatever you're imagining is still laced with, sort of like little kid panic and fear that you can't really afford to have when it's happening to you. Does that make sense?
No, to be honest, there have been parts where I've been fed up. And there have been parts where I've been like, I don't understand why I'm still sick. And there have definitely been parts where when the infection was really flaming up, I would, when I was really ill, when it would have kind of these flare-ups, I would just kind of become feverish and shake. And, you know, my thoughts weren't super clear at those times, but
sure.
No, it's honestly not all that bad. I mean, I feel, I know you've discussed anxiety. I know you've discussed anxiety because I have listened to all of your podcasts. And I've had experience with that in the past. It was about 5 years ago. I, out of the blue, suddenly kind of got a lightning bolt of anxiety came into my life, and it just sort of went, pachoo, hey, screw you. Now you have this anxiety. Yeah. And I started kind of dealing with it then. I don't really suffer from it so much anymore. I made a lot of changes in my life. You know, I do daily meditation. I try to take things in, you know, peace. You know, I try to do things more, I not work around the clock anymore and not, not awfulize things and kind of go, well, you know, is it really this bad? What's really the worst that can happen? And it hasn't actually been, and I always try to remember the positive part. I'm like, well, you know, you're only a block from a hospital. You know, like there's, this is, you're very lucky because you're a writer and you can, you know, you can work from home. You can work this out. Yeah. So it's not going to be that bad. You're very fortunate. Like, I always think of, well, you know, all there's so many people, if they get sick, it's a real problem, because if they can't actually, you know, go into, you know, mission control or wherever it is they work and guide the planes in. And I can do it from here. And, you know, so what if you have to take a nap during the day? That's all right. Like, it's, I think not awfulizing things was the biggest kind of tool in the bag of going, there's something to be learned from it. Like, maybe I have to learn to be a little bit more patient with being inside. People have certainly had to be inside for longer periods. What can I do with this? There's always something you can make with. I've always been a great believer of making anything out of whatever you've been given. Like, just if you've been given something boring, make something about being bored, you know, just you can work with anything.
Yeah. Well, and I think what I'm hearing too is, and what it sounds like, you know, is something I try to put into practice is, I think a lot of the anxiety that people have comes from a feeling of needing to be in control. And there's nothing like your body giving out on you in one way or another to like really hit home that you can't control that all the time. Mm-hmm. And that you really have to sort of surrender to the circumstance, especially when it's physical. And I think in a way, it's kind of an amazing lesson and can become a touch point, although it sounds to me like you were already there. But for somebody who something like that befalls them, and maybe they haven't done the work that you did beforehand, that that's a perfect opportunity to remember that, you know, just because something physical befalls you and you absolutely have physical evidence that you can't control it, doesn't mean that something that isn't physical, that's situational and emotional, it doesn't, like, do you know what I'm saying? That you sort of, that also can be a situation where you're like, you know what? I can't control this either. You know, I can't, yes, I have the choice of running, you know, yes, my heart's been broken. I have the choice of going out and sleeping with someone and doing a bunch of drugs and sort of trying to heal myself that way. Whereas if this were my physical body, I wouldn't be able to leave the house to make that decision.
Right.
But I can also choose to sort of nurse myself and take care of myself as I would if it were something physical. Does that make sense?
It does. Absolutely. And we can, there's this philosophy of, you know, it's permitted to feel like, I'm like, you know what? It's this whole thing of, I'm not allowed to feel sick. I don't want this to happen. Well, it's happening.
Right.
And it's going to stop.
Right.
You know, it's going to stop. So now you're just going to sit here and be with it for a little bit and we'll see. Maybe it's really not that bad. Let's see what it's actually doing. And if it gets really bad, then we'll see, you know, then we'll wait until it gets not so bad. Just sort of being patient.
Yeah.
And trying to keep yourself distracted, because that is the thing, is if you start thinking about it, you will think about it all the time. So I've been getting, just listening to stuff, I was in the hospital listening to podcasts all the time, and I laughed so hard at a Super Ego podcast that I set off the alarm on my
I want the guys in Super Ego to use that in some sort of a marketing
device. I tweeted it, and I was so, and they liked it, and I got so excited. I just a little tremor of thrill. It was the HR Giger going to the to a drive-in to get a hamburger, and it was so funny that I jerked my arm suddenly, and it set off an alarm.
That's amazing.
And it summoned the man I referred to as Creepy Nurse. And Creepy nurse suddenly appeared by my side. And I was like, oh no, I've summoned a creepy nurse.
Oh God. That feels, you know what? Summoning creepy nurse when you're laughing about something H.R. Geiger related actually feels like it really makes sense.
It did. It was all very much of a piece and I accepted it. I kind of in some ways don't mind when bad things happen because it always gives me something to talk about. It's been a sort of lifelong philosophy.
But I think that's such a huge thing. I mean, that's such a huge part of who you are, and it's, I think it speaks so much of what you've ended up doing for a living and stuff. And I'm wondering, does your mom's kind of, I mean, if what you've described is your mom's kind of strength and pragmatism and the fact that she is kind of a fountain of knowledge and can support and probably wasn't an alarmist about things, I mean, do you feel like that's had a really big influence on your character as a whole?
Probably. I'm not exactly like her. She's very kind of stable and very, she's actually much more in her, she's too much mom for one person. I was a little too managed as a teenager. Yeah.
I'm an only child
mm-hmm. and I really grew up not being allowed to do anything. Like really, like I was very, whenever I hear these podcasts and like all these things people did as teenagers, then I was like, oh, I just wasn't allowed to do those things. And then I ended up going to this Catholic all-girls academy that was like right out of the 50s. And it was all about sort of being restricted. However, my mother at the ratio of what my her to 1,100 kids is perfect because she can manage that with both hands tied behind her back. That's right. No problem. So I was a very kind of caged up kid. So I definitely kind of... she's also there's a big ritual in our family, especially with my mom, of sort of the retelling of terrible things that had happened.
Oh, so, interesting.
You know, we drive past someone's house. Remember, that's where we were when we found out that so-and-so died.
Oh, no.
There's a lot of that.
Oh, no.
We always remember where the yes. No. Remember the terrible things. It's the anniversary of so-and-so's death, and that's where so-and-so's buried. And that's my mom.
Well, that kind of flies in the face of me thinking that she was just, you know, enabling you to kind of not think about or focus on things that were, you know, scarier or harder negative. And
we just always retold the story. You know, we were great retellers of stories of remember when that. Whereas my dad is more remember when that terrible thing happened. That was pretty funny.
Right, right.
It's funny.
And this is these terrible things were happening in the Philadelphia area. Is that right?
Well, you know what? It really there weren't that many terrible things happening. It was not like
to turn Philadelphia into like a terrible place.
Well, it is, but I say that as someone who loves it.
No.
It's awful. If you're from there, you're allowed to say that. It's beautiful and lovely and weird, and it's its own very special climate. I just flashed back to another one of your podcast episodes where Paul Tompkins was talking about working at Hats in the Belfry.
This is wonderful. Now we've referenced him twice. You're sort of a wonderful, sort of card catalog. Of things to throw back to.
I'm 100% card catalog on board. Podcast. I was so excited that he worked at Hats on the Belfry on South Street. I was like, oh, what a wonderful thing to have happened.
Well, you know that, and I just went to Philadelphia this year for the first time, and I wasn't there for long at all. I mean, I was there for like maybe 36 hours, but I really liked it. It was freezing cold rain, but whatever I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, to be honest with you. And I was very, I don't want to say pleasantly surprised because I'd heard great things. The same thing happened to me with when I went to Chicago, which was whatever I've seen in films or whatever I assumed, I think I just sort of like kind of pictured the middle of Manhattan where there's sort of nothing identifiable about it. Do you know what I mean? Just like thinking about, you know, just being in like some part of Midtown. I think I just expected Chicago and Philadelphia to just sort of feel like New York without the landmarks that I associate with New York, and both places were so wide open and spacious.
Yeah.
And there was just more beautiful architecture and rivers. And there was just more than I allowed myself to imagine. And
downtown
I feel
Philadelphia
very foolish.
It's wonderful, actually. Like
it's gorgeous.
Yeah. It's got a lot of really beautiful neighborhoods, and you know, all along the Schuylkill River is like,
yeah.
it's, It's really cool. And a lot of parks. There's tons and tons of parks all over.
Yeah, I feel, I don't know who this person is in me that placed unknown expectations. If you had asked me, I don't think I would have admitted that. I would have been like, oh, sure, it's great. And I'm, it's surprising and a little bit disturbing to me that I was, that both times I was like, this is wonderful. Like, oh God, what did you think it was going to be?
I think it has more of a crime problem though than, I mean, I know that when I lived there, and when I went after college, when I worked in theater there, it was like your car would get broken into and like weirdos would follow you. And it was, there's a lot more kind of street crime and it was a little more, you had to be a little bit more careful. Mm-hmm. Like we had a lot, you know, you come back in your car, you know, more than once the car windows are smashed in. And I don't know if it's much different now. I feel like it's, it's a really, really complicated city with like a lot of really complicated issues going on. So, and the surrounding area is, you know, partially lovely. It's like, I kind of grew up in the Bucks County area, which is right outside. And I went to school in the Northeast section, which is the kind of, it's a kind of residential suburban kind of part of the city.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, it's very kind of old school. Like I went to a Catholic school and that was a big, I'm not Catholic and going to the school was like a big.
Well, and so for your mom, that was just kind of a, you know, this is a place like what, when you say that you weren't allowed to do stuff, I mean, obviously my brain kind of goes to there are people on both sides of that, which, you know, if you have like, I'm thinking about someone like Noreen DeWolf, you know, she was raised in a very strict environment, but she totally bucked against that and became sort of duplicitous for that reason, versus somebody else, you know, maybe like you or someone else I've talked to who was restricted and kind of honored that. You know what I mean?
I honored it a little bit, but I was sort of like that prisoner who's constantly, it was like Hogan's Heroes all the time with me. Like I was constantly sort of planning how to get out and what to do once I did get out. Like I kind of judged my odds and said, all right, how long do I really have to put up with this? And what can
But that to me seems like I don't think that I had the presence of mind to feel, to look really towards a future when I was a teenager. And I think there are some kids who have the emotional maturity. I don't know if that's what it is, but I think there are some kids who seem to do a better job at kind of seeing the long game, you know what I mean? Like looking at the big picture kind of stuff in some ways that others of us who maybe made kind of reckless decisions and that lean towards immortality ideas, couldn't get a hold of because you're just not thinking past, you know, like, so someone else's reaction, my point being is that they could be like, yeah, you know what? I'm just going to do this and fail out of school and stuff because I can't see past tomorrow.
Yeah, I more or less towed the line, but I also, if I crossed the line, I kind of did it quietly and got over the fence quietly at night and then quietly came back over the fence. I was very, I never did anything too bad. I played it close to the chest. the school I went to was really, I sent you a file earlier, which you,
I didn't open it per your request.
Yeah, don't open it yet, but I think it's going to explain a lot. The reason I ended up at this Catholic Girls Academy when I'm not Catholic is that there were just certain schools that people from my school went to. There was like four or five schools, and this was one of them. And we didn't really think much of the fact. Like we didn't really. We're like, we're not Catholic, but you know, who cares? It's all the same. Like, I might as well go there. There's nothing
wrong. Right.
Like,
it's an education.
For sure. No problem. So I applied. I sat the exam. You know, I get my letter. I'm 13, so I'm a year younger. And I get my letter saying, you've been called for interview. And it was a cold January night that I was called for my interview. And I am a very kind of timid. At the time, when I was 13, I was very, very timid. I was very quiet. I was thinking all the time, but I was super quiet, like just always the wheels were turning, but I was super shy. And I'd never spoken to a nun. I didn't really know what I was getting into. And
had you seen any kind of stuff that made you think that you, like, had you seen any kind of
movies where you see schools and nuns represented that you had any kind of idea going in, or was it a complete blank slate?
It was pretty much a blank slate. Like, I remember seeing two nuns in a diner once, and that was about it. Like, it was
really... That sounds like a joke, and I don't know what the punchline would be, and I don't know what the media is.
I saw two nuns in a diner, and I was like, those are some nuns in a diner. And so I thought, nah, it won't be a big deal. I get in, and the school is part of it is in an old mansion, and part of it looks like a converted parking lot. It's not the most attractive place, and one building is beautiful, one building is ugly. And we kind of arrive, freezing cold, dark night. They've turned off all the lights, and they've lit everything with votive candles that kind of go all the way up and down. And the halls in the front.
Oh, my. How dramatic.
It was. The halls in the front are marble. And just in the front area, and there's a chapel, a really, like, painted, frescoed ceiling, like, and candles going all the way into the chapel. And there are statues in the chapel of people. Like, and it's all just in the shadows, and we walk through the door, and I see all these flickering candles and people standing in the shadows and the outlines of this chapel in the distance. And then I saw the thing that I sent you in the file that says do not open. And I invite you to open that now to get.
Oh my God. I'm so excited. Okay. I am opening it. Oh no.
Yes.
Oh my God. What is happening?
You might want to describe what, I mean,
my God.
Your feelings about it.
This is, I just glanced down in the corner because I was like, what is the writing and will this explain this? So it says in the corner, 1943, Polonia, there's a group of nuns, some of them are standing, some of them are on their knees. They are all holding their hands clasped in prayer. That's the first thing you see. All you see is at first the nuns in prayer.
Yep.
Then your eye opens out and you see that at least one nun is lying on the ground with a pool of blood underneath her. Yep. There are soldiers, one assumes German Nazis, standing off to the side in the back, and one of them has just like stabbed the nun.
Yeah,
and then there's like a gaping hole with a shovel. So one assumes that these soldiers are massacring these nuns and dumping them into an open grave?
Correct. Yes.
Oh, that's crazy!
Yes.
In the school!
Well, this was not only in the school, by the front door. So I turned, and this is what's on the wall.
Get ready for the next 4 years of your life, everyone.
Exactly. And
wow.
Then underneath in the shadows are the two nuns going, here's your folder, you know, go, go upstairs. And you're led through the shadows. This place is cold and dark. And you're just being led up the staircases, you know, chunk, 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 you know, fire doors, chunk, chunk, into a room with a nun who's just sitting there kind of going through the stuff. Hey, you know. Oh, you're not Catholic. You're going to have to go to religion class. You fine with that? Well, we accept you. You know, it's fine. Apparently, I'm white as a sheet the whole time. My mom said, you look like you were going to go down. I was ready for it. You look like you were going to faint.
Oh, God.
And I was like, no, it's literally fine. It felt a little weird, but it's okay. And so that's where I went to high school.
Did it disappoint based on the painting?
No, it did not. It did not. That was a good indicator of it. It's an old-fashioned school run by a Polish order, and it taught some stuff that I would soon learn was like pre-Vatican II. It taught really old-fashioned stuff. Some of the nuns on staff were over 90 years old.
Oh, my.
And we were literally not allowed to go outside during the day, so the doors were locked. So... Once you're in,
good Lord,
you didn't like whenever people are like high school, you know, I went outside in my car and I drove to like Burger King for lunch and then I smoked weed behind something. I'm like, are you kidding me? Literally? Like,
wow.
We had rules about what staircases we were allowed to use. Like you're allowed to go up this staircase between 11 and 2. You can go down this staircase between 2 and 3 unless chapel is on. Everything had rules. It was just rules, rules, rules about everything.
But you didn't have to live there. It wasn't. Thank God for that.
No. But I wasn't. My mother also didn't want me to drive. She claimed that it was the insurance was too expensive, and so I couldn't drive. I was like, I'll get a job, I'll pay. She was like, no. And really, she just didn't want me I think it was too dangerous. She didn't want me to drive. So I was really stuck. Like, I was stuck at home a lot. I was really, like, I really was the kind of house, you know.
So did it end up working against you that your mom had the experience that she had because she could see the worst possible scenario that could ever happen to anyone with each thing because she'd seen it?
I think it was just that my mom was like, you are my child, the most precious thing in the world. I'm going to protect you from anything that could possibly happen to you ever.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like she, you know, she was really cautious. My dad was like, yeah, you got to let her do some more stuff. But my dad is slightly incautious. So I ended up just sort of being really bored and constantly kind of thinking out. And all the things that were happening to me inside of the Catholic school were some of the things I really didn't agree with. And it felt like I had 4 years of being slightly tested. Like, this cannot be what reality is like. Like, this.
Sure.
This is not. None of this makes a lot of sense. And I'm not sure. I think some other people here know that it doesn't make any sense. I can't 100% tell, but I made some of my best friends there, like friends to this day, lifelong friends. Overall, my experience was really positive. Like, it was a happy atmosphere, mostly, but crazy stuff happened there that should never have happened that was really, like, kind of shocking.
Like what?
Well, they just didn't have any, you know, I worked.
Were people getting hit with bamboo switches?
No, it was nothing like that. I mean, oh, see.
Do you feel that you can't disclose too much for respect?
I can't, well, okay, I'll disclose one thing because I think it's a matter of public record. Like, it is a matter of public record. We had one priest that was in our school and he didn't seem to have a job. He just sort of sat in his office all day long and sort of waved at us. And I was like, I never really knew what his job was. And I was just like, why is he here? Maybe is that the thing? I just have to have somebody, like one priest in the building. I don't know what he, does all day. And, didn't think really about him for years. And then, just about a year and a half ago, one of my friends sends me an email and says, did you see this about brother blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, he's named as a sex offender that they had to release a bunch of court documents as part of a settlement, and he was a known sex offender and he had been moved into our school.
Oh boy. Do you mind if I ask if it was boys or girls? Like, did that make a difference?
I don't think the records didn't specify any of that.
Because, you know, if it was a boy situation, they were like, well, we'll put you into the one place we know you won't get into any trouble.
Who knows?
I hate to like justify it. No matter what, it's shocking.
He was moved around a lot, but he was with us for a while. He was there the whole time I was there. And that was something I found out later. But just like, they just didn't seem to be prepared for any. We didn't have a school nurse and we didn't have a, like, they didn't really have a psychologist or anything. Like, they didn't have counselors. If bad stuff happened to you, they kind of just expected you to deal with it. And for example, I was a peer counselor in senior year. It was the thing where you got chosen and you did a little training and then you sat in an office and nobody ever came to see you except one freshman started to come to see me. And she was started to come and see me. And I was like, okay. And she started to say things like, I think I want to kill myself. And I was like, that's really bad. And she started leaving poetry in my locker about how she wanted to kill herself. So I gathered all of this up. And I took it to the person who was supposed to be in charge, the head of this counseling. We had somebody was in charge, but I don't know if they were a counselor or not. And I said, here is this person, this student. She's a freshman. I think she needs your help. Here's all the things I've gathered up for you. Take it away. And they're like, oh, this seems bad. You're going to need to talk to her some more.
Oh, no.
We're gonna pull you out of class and you can sit and you can try to convince her to go to a doctor. And I was like, are you kidding? Seriously, is what you're going to do? And they did that. And eventually I ended up, my mom comes up in a lot of these stories. Eventually I just told my mom that was going on. I'm like, yeah, they have me. I've been dealing with this girl for weeks. She pulled the car over to the side of the road and was like, are you kidding me? She got home, sped home, picked up the phone, was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? This is not.
Yeah.
Because she handles that sort of thing. And she's like, first of all, what are you doing to my daughter? Second of all, what are you doing to this? Like, you will not do this again. You will get a professional. Like, this is crazy. But that's just sort of how they dealt with stuff. I mean, bad stuff didn't happen in our school. Nobody got pregnant in our school. Nobody got, everything was kind of just sort of brushed away. There was no mechanism to deal with any, you know, anything that there was. People just disappeared if they got pregnant.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of, yeah, that definitely speaks to sort of what you were saying about it being kind of, you know, caught in the 1950s or something. That's sort of like, you know, out of sight, out of mind. If we don't talk about it, then it's not going to become, you know, because I'm sure there's like this sort of fear of kind of mass hysteria, right? Because that feels very 50s too, is the idea that once you let people know that one thing has happened, suddenly there are going to be like all these copycat freak out situations, or there's going to be some sort of reaction where it's like, it's like it's measles. You know what I mean? Like, it's like people get infected with rebelliousness, or infected with depression, or infected with pregnancy or whatever, which is like not necessarily a great way to deal with the world and to deal with the reality of young women, you know, in puberty and stuff.
Never mentioned. Never. Mm. I went through high school for 4 years with like literally nothing bad you would have thought ever happened to anybody, because it just wasn't, there weren't facilities for it. There wasn't really capacity for it. And I saw a lot of stuff that really made me angry. And so I was, I was angry a lot. I was angry at the system. I was always like, this system is wrong. This is a bad system. And
did you have anyone who did sort of disappear or get, you know, did you have the kind of like Angelina and Gin Girl Interrupted sort of like a loud voice of dissent who's like, fuck you, everybody. And then they just quietly disappear and are expelled.
Yeah. One of my good friends.
Well, there you go.
From my freshman year. Yeah. She just went away. And then when she told me what happened, she said, yeah, they just sort of decided I didn't belong there. They said they claimed I did something I didn't do, and they just got rid of her. They didn't like, she had spiky hair. They didn't like her.
Well, she does sound like she's trouble if she had spiky hair.
I know, yeah. So she had spiky hair, and they were like, oh, very bad. We're going to get rid of her. It was a weird atmosphere, and it was one where reality was not acknowledged very much. Like, we definitely, it was definitely, like, I was Protestant too. So, and that was, I felt like a dirty secret. Like,
sure.
My first year, I spent terrified that people would find out. Like, I was really quiet about it. I was like, oh, God, if people are going to find out, they're going to put a letter on me. They're going to make me wear a big hat or something.
Right.
And then the second year, I thought about it because I'd had the first year's experience. And I thought, you know what? I have a new plan. I'm going to tell everybody. I'm just going to make it a big deal. Uh-huh. Say it every possible junction. And it happened that in my second year, we had a really obnoxious religion teacher who was an ex-seminary guy who dropped out. He was 21 years old.
Oh.
Teaching a room full of high school girls who were way ahead of him.
Uh-huh.
And he was just like, his attitude was, I am a super smart guy. I'm basically a genius. And we were all like, uh-huh. And he was toast from the beginning, but he would say crazy things. Like, I remember one time in class, he said, I have a mathematical formula that proves the existence of God.
Oh, wow.
And I thought for a couple minutes, and then I put up my hand and I said, you know, if you have that, you should show it to us. And he's like, well, you wouldn't understand it. I said, okay, well, if you have that, isn't that all we should ever learn, ever? Like, right. If you have that, why are we wasting our time with literally anything else? Like, we could just be working on that. Like, if you've got that. But the thing is, I don't think you have it. Because I think I would have heard about this through some other means. We did not get along. And he eventually also disappeared a couple weeks before the end of the year under mysterious circumstances.
Wow.
He was a strange guy. I don't want to cast aspersions. I don't know what happened. He just went away. He just suddenly wasn't our teacher anymore. And it was like 6 weeks before the end of school, and he was just gone. And they came in, they're like, he is not your teacher anymore. And then my senior year, I also want to say, I honestly, on many levels, love my school. But I admit that there are huge problems in the system. Like, especially.
Well, it sounds to me like, you know, if you're the person that you are now, that you were going to have a good experience, whatever the circumstances, and that there, you know, the great things about it were things that you focused on, but you also, you know, were aware and watchful and seeing and observing and taking in and processing stuff that you knew wasn't right or that didn't feel right for you.
It, well, in our senior year, we had a nun who'd come from another order. And the order had shut down, and she was like the last, you know, remaining nun, or she needed a job. So they sent her over to our school. And she didn't wear a habit. She just dressed like a grandma, like an adorable grandma in a cookie box. She was like the cutest little old woman. She was so cute. She had curly hair and little pink cheeks, and she was so nice. Meanest woman I have ever met.
Aww.
Used to love to make girls cry. It was like her favorite thing to do. And she loved the more goody two-shoes or just well-behaved and well-adjusted and nice and hardworking you were, the more she liked to see you cry. So,
whoa, she's like a sadist.
Yeah, like she was dark. Like whenever the student counselors were going about their business in the morning before the bell, which was at 8:12. So if they were doing attendance or if they were doing something like taking something to the front office as per their job, if they didn't show up again by 8:12, she locked them out and counted Amazing. Them absent. And then they'd stand out there and what we were doing our job, like we were taking, and then she's like, well, you were outside, and then start to cry. And then she'd start to laugh. And I was like, you, I'm going to watch because
wow,
you are just dark, dark, dark. And she, yeah. I told her right away, I was like, I'm Protestant. And she would say things like, I don't know how you function just going around with all that sin on your shoulders.
Oh, God.
And I'd be like, all right.
Like, oh, my God.
Okay. But the most amazing day was the day she drew the model of the solar system on the chalkboard. She drew the model of the solar system, said, here is the sun, here is God, and now I'm going to show you where all the religions are in the as drawn by planets. So she's like, here we go. We have Mercury, that's Catholics, closest to God. Then we have Venus, that's the Jewish people because they are pretty much right, and then they got it wrong.
Oh, God, this is amazing.
Then here's Earth. That's Protestants because they deny, you know, they're not as good. And I was like, well, at least I'm from Earth.
That's right. That's right.
But that was on a test. I had tests on things
what?
Like that. Oh, yeah. I had tests on things like this.
My God.
I had tests on all. We had to have we had a mandatory class. Half of our year was. Religion was a major subject every day, and then it was 4 days a week later on. And half of the year was church history or church doctrine, and half of the year was just behavior, like loving. We had a class on marriage in senior year. Wow. It was taught by a nun. So we had to take marriage as a major subject.
Where does romance kind of come into it? It sounds like there wasn't a whole lot of room for that with the world that you were inside of in high school.
We got mysterious. I didn't have any because I was never allowed out. So, I only knew like one guy. I had like one guy friend. And, I was like, all right, clearly I can't seem to get out of here, but I'll just bide my time. I'll bide my time very carefully. When I get out of here, I'll get to business. That was
and did you?
On schedule.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Did you have the sort of like freak out, I moved out of my house, I'm going crazy for a second life, or were you still kind of did you not go down the road of like, oh my God, I can't believe how crazy I went because I had been starved for these different experiences for so long?
Moderately so. I mean, I kind of took the middle way. Like I definitely acted out a bit, but in a way that I had sort of planned on doing. And,
I know. It's like, I love that you had all that time to sort of calculate what your freak out was going to be.
Yeah. No, it's all good. It's whatever, because part of my job now as a YA writer is that, you know, I talk to so many teenagers.
Yeah.
And they tell me, they're like, my life is so boring, all these. And I was like, hey, don't worry about it. It's all going to be all right. Like, yeah. You don't have to worry. Things don't have to happen to you right away. And if things are happening to you, things will change. Like, you do not worry, my friend.
Yeah.
I have been where you are.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Worry. Take my hand. Come to the internet with me. We will talk about it. It's going to be fine. Do not worry about
it. No kidding. No, so, absolutely. It's so important to have those voices, too, when you're that age, I think. But did you were you writing back then?
Oh, yes. Yes. I wanted to be – I was definitely like, I'm a writer. I was very confident about this. I was like, I am. This is what I am. And I wrote in all the times that I wasn't supposed to be writing. So usually math class was a big one.
Yeah.
So I never did my math homework. And I was a
kind of a great improviser of math classes. And so the way I got through math class, because I never did my homework, was I would sit there and, you know, what they would do is they'd say, okay, and do your homework up on the board and show your work. You know, they'd call you up. And I made sure to volunteer right away. Like, first hard problem, I made sure to be like, I'll do it, sister, and I'll do it with my friend Suzanne. I don't know why I thought I could do this, but I was always like, Suzanne and I will do it together.
Yeah.
And I volunteered not just myself, but my friend Sue, who I knew had done it.
All right.
And for some reason, they allowed this to happen. They were like, all right, we'll humor you. And I did this every day. She knew, all right, Maureen, you and Suzanne will do the problem together. And
that's very smart.
Yeah, I just was like, this is what I'll do. It'll be
good. Did Suzanne care? Was she like, I know what you're doing?
She was a long-suffering, very, very good friend who was just mm-hmm. like, it's cool. Like, she just kind of knew. She was like, eh, it's all right. So I had all kinds of ways of covering for myself. Because I would sit there in class and I would just write, you know, I would write super boring stuff. I used to write like 9 pages of description of rain and things like that. And, you know.
But you know what? I mean, I know that seems boring, but that's the kind of stuff I think I got really into writing when I was in high school too. Like, for the first time really being exposed to kind of, and I don't know if you had this experience based on the schooling that you had, but, you know, being exposed to Greek literature and being exposed to poetry and stuff. And sort of, I feel like even though I was an, you know, avid, voracious reader, that's kind of the first time high school I remember real critical thinking about what I was reading and about, you know, kind of taking things apart. And I think that that's kind of the first time, because I had some really great teachers, that I felt like, you know, oh, I can sort of see how this is done. And it made it feel more possible that I could do it in a way that I don't know if I, like, you know, because I was always kind of in theater and music and stuff like that. And that felt like something I was entitled to. But I feel like high school was the first time I really kind of understood, like, oh, this is a thing that I could do. And I obviously didn't end up doing it. But I don't know, like, it became clear for me in a different way. During that age,
I was obsessed with sort of breaking stuff down and doing analysis and stuff. And if I could just do that all the time, I'd be happy. And I was, I had one really good teacher who actually kind of took me aside and was like, I'm just going to let you take, you're going to do AP English, but I'm going to teach you this other English course on the side, just like at lunch or whatever. I'm just going to give you all the stuff for it and you'll do it. And like, really, she just was very, like, just out of her personal time, just was like, here's a bunch of extra reading material. And
well, that was what I was wondering, too. I was wondering, because, you know, the kind of staff that you were talking about, if there were teachers who did inspire you and that you did feel kind of that you had that sort of Dead Poets Society relationship, too.
Yeah, I had, I had some very strange teachers there and some amazing teachers there. And she really mentored me. She was a lay teacher. Not that that matters. I mean, but she really, she just was like, you're good at this. I'm going to give you access to all of, you know, I'm going to let you go up to the college library. I'm going to let you, because we didn't really have a school library or a librarian or anything. We had a room called the library, but all it had in it was the Catholic Encyclopedia and a copier we weren't allowed to use.
Amazing.
And if you went in, there was a nun who was 95 years old, literally, who would say, girls, do not put any bent dimes in the copier. She was just obsessed. She was just obsessed that we just were carrying around bent dimes with us wherever we went, just wanting to put them in our copier. So basically, we're just never allowed to use that
copier. I don't think I've ever seen a bent dime.
No, I don't think anyone has. But she was like, don't put bent dimes in the copier. And just you came in, and she was like, just block the copier. She was like, nope. Nope. Oh, but she, unfortunately, she was lovely. She passed away. When the first 3 weeks of my high school experience there, 3 nuns died. One died every week. And,
oh, no.
They were laid out in the chapel, and we went to sit and do a rosary, which I didn't know how to do or own. So I had to
you were a Protestant sinner.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. And they're like, you're going to need to bring in a rosary. I'm like, where do I get a rosary? Anyone have a rosary? Run around looking for a rosary. My grandmother had one. We got that. I didn't know how to do it, so I just kind of fumbled with it. I did a lot of fakery in the beginning. Like,
Like, I didn't know how to do the mass. When nothing was written down, there were no instructions. Everyone knew all the words. It was like being in a play where everyone knew the words.
Sure.
And I didn't know the words.
It's a bad dream. You've described a stress dream.
So I had my friend Laurie, I whispered to her ear the first day. I'm like, I'm not Catholic and I don't know what I'm doing. And she's like, just follow my lead. And she guided me. Like, she would always make sure to stand next to me. And she would sluttily elbow me just to let me know it was time to move.
Right.
And like, she, you know, she would give a little indication with her hand if it was kneeling, standing, like, because I didn't know. Just here. And I would start it. I followed these hand signals. And when wow. they would do the various recitations of things, I would just move my. And I eventually learned them. I did a lot of mumbling. And that's a year of that. A year of being in a play that I didn't know the words to, and I didn't wow. know the actions, and I just faked it all the time. Constantly. I pretended like I had an idea of what was going on, and I didn't. I never knew ever what
I
was happening.
I think that in some ways you've described like the larger picture of what it feels like to be a human being though sometimes. Like yeah. feeling like, how often do we feel like we're on the outside of something that everyone seems to have figured out?
It's super good training for life. Like, after that, yeah. I was very like, sure. That's how I got most of my jobs. Like, I went to theater school and writing school, and like, I had to temp and get all these jobs. I moved to New York and I had no job. And I would go into jobs. They'd say, have you done this job before? I'd be like, yes, of course I have. I'm very good at this job. I know everything about this job. I can do this job. Give me this job. I'll Amazing. Be the best at it. No idea what it was. None whatsoever. Just would go home, try to figure it out, guesswork. Talking my way into things, like, it trained me to kind of go, sure, yeah, whatever, I can do that.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure, I'll do
well,
that
because job. You knew, yeah, exactly, because you knew you exactly, you had seen the outcome of, you know, here's a thing that I experienced also. I remember feeling like, what the hell am I going to do? This is crazy and intimidating and strange and different, and you saw the outcome as being, like, yeah, survivable and just fake it till you make it, that whole spiel.
Around,
but
see what everyone else is doing, you know, generally follow along, you know, just quiet, be quiet in the beginning, just look around, watch yeah. what the others are doing, just follow them around a little bit, and then you'll be, it's not like I was administering anesthesia or something, you know, I was right. like being a waitress or writing copy for something, you know, it's like, I'll figure sure. this out, sure.
Sure. Oh, that reminds me. I read that, and then we have to get into some mash, but I did read that you had been a restaurant, a waitress at a theme restaurant. Yeah. Is that true? Oh, what yeah. was the theme?
It was the Jekyll and Hyde Club on on
Wonderful.
It just closed, and it's so sad. I was there. I walked past a couple months ago, and they were just shuttering it, and I was like, no.
That was I didn't even know it was a thing.
Oh. It's so
I missed it.
It was I moved to New York on like a Friday, and I walked into this place, and it was like a haunted house theme, and I was like, this is the place for me.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I would like to be a waitress here. And they said, are you experienced? I said, yes, yes, very experienced. I went home and I made up a resume.
Amazing.
I made up a bunch of places in England. I had actually been a waitress in England for about 6 weeks. I was like, they're not going to call any of these places. So I'm
yeah.
Like, I was there for a year. I was here for a year. Sure, sure. Here you go. And they're like, great. You will be a waitress. And I was like, fabulous. And it was a 4-story haunted house theme. At that time, they turned all the lights off. So it was totally dark outside, lit by these fake candles. And it had
I can't believe I never went there.
Oh,
oh, I'm really upset because I finally only this year went to Sleep No More. Oh, and
Janet.
Yeah.
This yeah. place was a marvel. What was also amazing about it was we had the wait staff and then we had actors who walked around dressed as characters like mad scientists, but they also powered all of the things built into the walls. Everything that looked like a skeleton or a picture or like a rhinoceros head was fitted with a camera and microphones.
Oh my.
So they could activate things and spy on the customer.
I am so furious that I never went. Obviously, I guess no one else was either if they closed it down.
So what we would do is we had an internal system where we could say, you know, the people at the table on the second floor in the corner are acting up. Can you get eyes on it?
Oh my God.
And then
God.
You'd suddenly see, and you'd be talking to a skeleton on the wall. It was like, okay, I'm on it. And then Skeleton would go quiet. And then you'd see the rhinoceros head on the second floor through the vestibule. You'd see the rhinoceros head suddenly turn.
Oh, my God.
And the rhinoceros would spy on them. And then the rhinoceros would turn back. And then the skeleton next to you would come back to life and go, all right, here's what I found out. They ordered a bunch of appetizers, God. And then they canceled. We had the best network of cameras.
That's and, like, amazing.
It was the most amazing job.
Oh, God, I'm bitter. I'm filled with bitterness. Filled with bitterness that I didn't go.
It was a good – I had to give it up when I went to grad school. Because they – and the theater department, they wouldn't let us have any outside jobs that took away from – so I had to give it up just when they'd given me really good shifts. It was very sad. Could have paid my way.
I feel your pain. I really feel your pain. I got to be honest with you. All right, I can't believe this, but we've already been on the phone an hour. But this is really – been such a joy and a delight, and I do need to get into some MASH.
I've dreamt of this.
This, well, listen, if there are any dream categories that you would like me to include, just let's let it flow. Let it flow. All right, I'm gonna start with three places in the world. You know what? I don't even care if they're real or imagined. Mm-hmm. But what if, let's take the restaurant in which you worked to the next level. Right. Let's say three places in the world or in fiction become a theme restaurant that you get to work in. Oh. What would they be?
All right. I want, first of all, the house from Rocky Horror.
Amazing.
I want Frank's Mansion. I've always considered it to be a happy place.
Yes, perfect.
I take perfect pride in that. I think that that is a very happy place.
It seems it. I don't disagree with you.
And I think I want somewhere that Bertie Wooster has to go for the weekend, maybe. Like one of the many manors that he has to go to. So some sort of P.G. Wodehouse kind of...
Sure.
Manor.
Great.
And,
got it.
Ooh, that's hard. The third has to be some sort of detective, like Sherlock kind of thing, where you actually there's a murder at some point.
Yeah, like a basically like a Clue house, you work as the waitress in a how to host a murder type.
Yeah, it's not
mansion
like that, but better. Like not whatever version of those. The Murder Mystery Dinner Theater, like much better. It's like an actual house, like a murder by death house or something. You know what I mean? Like
that. Yeah, yep, yep. Yeah, that's what I want. I'm just putting Agatha Christie type.
Yeah.
Murder mansion.
Absolutely. Like and then there were none kind of. Yes.
Yes. And then there were nuns is your high school experience. Oh, thank you, everybody. Thank you very much. I'm waving at everyone.
This is why you're a very famous person.
Oh, well, that's just a lie right there. Okay. Next category is going to be, three people from fiction, whom you wish were your dear friend.
Oh my God. Well, a lot of them are going to be the same. I want, oh boy. Oh God. I do want to hang out with Sherlock. You know, I do.
Yeah.
I've been a lifelong mystery buff, like a crazy mystery buff.
Yeah, me too.
That would be one. And yeah, I also do want to hang out with Bertie Wooster. I want to hang out with him, but I should make the third different.
You do whatever you want. This is your MASH.
I know, but you know, I'm looking around. I don't want to just have so much. I want somebody from, I want Auntie Mame.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, cool. Perfect. Let's go with vacation home, real place that exists in the world, three. Sure.
Okay, somewhere in the Caribbean. Because they don't, I am a great friend of sea level.
Great.
So my ideal level is 1 foot. Like you should be in beautiful seawater up to about your mid ankle. That to me is the appropriate. So somewhere beautiful in the Caribbean.
Great.
I always have this fantasy of some sort of lake house. Like I've never even been to like Burlington, Vermont, but I always imagine that that's like I want a house on a lake where you can swim. I just want to apparently just be near a body of water at all
times. I know you want to wade through most of your life. I just think it makes perfect sense.
Slosh gently through.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. As long as there are no fish in it, because fish are
fish. Well, that's kind of important to ecosystems, so I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Yeah, they're very dangerous, even the little cute ones. And then probably somewhere in the English countryside, I guess, as well.
Great. Isn't it interesting that you do love the water and being in the water, but you don't love marine life?
I mean, I respect marine life, and I think that's a difference. You know, I believe that that's their home, and they have every right to bite you and kill you like they want.
No, I know. I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. I you're no stranger to the podcast, so you know that I have like a very complicated, thrilling, fearful, respectful, but also maybe turning towards me enjoying snorkeling experience.
I've gone snorkeling, and I love it. And I have also been known to panic while snorkeling and start speed swimming away because I thought I saw dangerous eels that were in fact sticks.
I can really relate to that. I mean, I've only had one experience and nothing like that happened, but it was a short experience enough that I wouldn't put it past myself at all to speed swim away.
Oh, I left my friend for dead. I was like, good. She turned around and she was like, you were 50 yards away all of a sudden. She was like, hey, do you see that?
What about the buddy system?
Oh, yeah. We went snorkeling. Yeah. One of the first things we saw when we got off this one spot was the person's like, oh, look right down there. You see that fish? And it's this, it doesn't even look like a fish. It looks like a 70s Swedish light fixture. It's got about 60 points sticking out of it. And it's just a puff with spikes. And they're like, that is a deadly lionfish. And I was like,
oh God.
Well, goodbye. And then I just launched out of the water in my jetpack.
I completely understand. I really agree with you that it's not that I feel, it's not that I hate them. It's just that I'm like, what? Why wouldn't that fish come and hurt me and poison me? Like, why wouldn't it? I don't belong here.
You're in its house.
I feel I'm inviting it to hurt me in some way. I totally get it. Totally get it. All right, listen, I got to move on, but I could talk about that for hours. Next question is going to be, oh, by the way, listen, no one cares about this but you and me, but I do think it's amazing that your first name is my middle name and we have the same birth date. Okay, I just wanted to say that. Yeah, remember we figured that out? I don't even know how I found that out, but I remember that when I direct messaged you on Twitter when we started talking, I was like, now hold on just a second. Not only is my middle name your first name, but I also just found out that we have the same birthday.
I didn't know we had the same. That's so exciting.
Yeah, we have the same birthday. I know, February 16th.
Oh my God, Jen, this is so amazing.
I know.
We only have terrible people on our birthday. We have the same birthday as King John Eel.
I think there was one person once that I was like, oh, that's cool.
LeVar
we have
Burton.
The same birthday as it. I think it is. I think you're absolutely right.
We have LeVar Burton, but we also have King John Eel. And that's a lot to counterbalance.
I know. We have a lot. We have really have the weight of King John Eel on our shoulders at all times.
I know. That's why I used to throw a birthday party with him every single year.
Well, there you go.
And now he's gone. Oh,
speaking of eels. Okay. Next, I got to go. You know what? Let's make it birthday themed. Three things on that get served on your birthday to eat or drink that make it the best birthday ever.
Oh man, that's going to be hard because this thing has taken my appetite away for like six. I've forgotten what food is. So
I know you have to look back on kinder days.
Also, when I think about these things, all of a sudden, I suddenly have the food preferences of a six-year-old.
But see, that's what's so great about it. By the way, and we're talking about birthday parties, so you might as well go for it.
I'm like, I want a taco party.
Love it.
A crunchy shell taco party. But I'm vegetarian, I guarantee you. So I have to have like the fake
taco.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. Also, I feel that 90% of the people listening would be like, excuse me, I would love a taco party and I'm not six.
Listen, everyone loves a taco party. And you're from LA, so you get like real, like the good ones. Like you have good.
Yes, I would say yes-ish, but because I'm originally from Tucson, I have a different idea of what great Mexican food tastes like, and also San Francisco. So between Tucson and San Francisco, I can't say definitively that I love Los Angeles Mexican food, which is very strange.
You have that's a lot of goodness, though.
I know, it really is. All right, taco party, what's next?
I also just want pizza. It's like the one food I've been craving.
Yeah, pizza party.
And then now I guess I should class it up a little bit. Because what am I going to do next? Like, honestly, it's going to be like child nuggets at this point.
Cupcake party.
Oh my goodness. Yes, let's just have a cupcake party. Let's just do
See?
It.
See? I mean,
I went on a thing once where they gave you an undecorated cupcake and then they handed you what looked like a sewing box. And then all the drawers opened and it was like tubes of icing and stuff you could
decorate. Oh, that's wonderful.
It was magic.
That is quite wonderful.
We would have
also,
that at
I
my
am,
party.
Yeah, you. We absolutely would have sewing kit cupcake party. The last couple of birthday parties I've even bothered having, I've had in a park on an afternoon, just to let you know how attached to the idea of a children's birthday party I am, because, and then people could bring their kids, and I'm not like a big drinker or like a late night person anymore, so. To me, that sort of is the perfect birthday party. Is like a pizza party, picnic in the park with cupcakes, water balloons, maybe a pinata.
All right.
But and like a bunch of kids running around.
You just said we have the same birthday. Mm-hmm. And all that tells me is you live in a very different climate.
Because, yeah.
You know.
I do. All of those things are possible. It's like
warm.
February
birthday party in New York, you know, like a picnic. We'll all be freezing to death. We'll be dead. Like something like from the end of the end of The Shining. It's like we're all sitting there.
Frozen,
yeah.
Hedge crying. Animal creatures.
We're all dead and frostbitten, yeah. Sitting on like the remains of a blanket in a park. Yeah. So that's
Well,
nice.
Listen, Maureen, I cordially invite you to come and spend your birthday with me in February, and we can do a park party. I'm 100% on board for it. It will be very fun. I mean, you might need a sweater, but that's about the worst.
It's so upsetting. So
yeah, no,
cold.
The offer stands.
So cold
the offer here. Stands.
You're gonna
well,
be,
I'm just telling you.
You're just going to turn around and be like, and then you'll have forgotten it. And then you'll just turn around and I'll be like, hi, Janet. It's
yeah. Me. No, I'll never forget.
You invited
I'm 100%
me to your birthday
ready.
Party, Janet.
Yeah. I'm no, here. You can try to be creepy, but it's not going to work.
I'm the one who put the
invitation out there. Okay. Next category will be, three alternate careers. Alternate universe Maureen Johnson careers.
Oh, well, I gotta be a nurse.
Yep, gotta get
I
that
I think
in there.
I'd be great at that. Although, because I see it as like running dramatically down halls with a needle going, I have to give this. But my mom's like, it's mostly just people barfing on you. And then, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh boy. I don't know. I guess I'd like to maybe work on TV or something. That seems exciting. Like, you know, I don't know, doing what? Writing
All
something.
Right, TV.
Yeah.
TV, got
I'm
it.
On the I'm doing something with the TV.
Yeah.
Where I get to go and there's like cameras and I'm like, ah, here's some stuff. And they're like, yes, give it to the actor. It'll be very exciting. That'll be.
That's it.
See,
you've described it.
Very
you've described it.
Clear idea. Uh-huh.
You know what it is? It's basically your nurse idea, but instead of holding a needle, you're rushing down with a script.
Oh, yeah.
I got to get these pages to the set.
Yeah, it's like
very similar.
30 Rock, like just when she's like, we have to find Tracy. You know, like that's that kind of,
yeah,
want that.
That totally makes sense to me. I completely understand this idea. Okay, great. And then what's your third
Private
one
detective.
That I'm forcing you?
Private detective.
Yes. Good God. I can't believe that wasn't number one. P.
It was just waiting.
D. I'll
just
forget that
drop.
That's
like
for
just
Private
boom.
Detective. God, I can't even get into it with you about Serial. We'll have to talk about that
oh,
offline.
Oh, my goodness.
Although I will say this, some person, and I have absolutely no idea who it is. I got to find out. Now it's like its own mystery that I have to solve. Someone, I just, picked up the mail, from yesterday and there was a t-shirt, that someone sent me as a surprise gift. There's no note, nothing. And it says, Adnan did it? Question mark.
Well, that's not creepy. That's not creepy at all.
So I don't know who sent it to me, but what I'm going to have to convey to that person is I love the thought and I will certainly wear that t-shirt at home, but I will never, ever wear a t-shirt that is a joke about a real person serving time in prison.
Yeah.
Like it's not entertainment to me. I became obsessed with it because it was real and because someone's serving time and because I don't know if he did it or not. And so I can't wear like a fun joke t-shirt about like a real thing. But yeah, I have absolutely no idea who sent it. Isn't that weird?
That, yes.
was it you?
Maybe it was Anon. Like, who knows? Like,
I mean, I don't know.
That would be,
I don't know. I got to
get
probably,
to the bottom. That would be a bad move on his part. But
I got to get on. I really got to get on. Yeah.
But
you know who's going to tell me is Reddit. All I have to do is just like put a sentence that I got it and somehow someone will have all of that information solved and they'll accuse 15 people of sending it.
All I know is all of America has never been this interested in a Best Buy parking lot.
No, that's certainly true. Much less a Best Buy. I couldn't agree more.
And how can't? How is it they don't know if there were phones there?
I know. It's a whole thing. I'm going to talk to you about this offline. There's no question about it. I don't want to put these nice folks through it. But I also want to say that even though the podcast is not over, there is so much fresh stuff that constantly comes out every day that it's way more pervasive in my life than I thought it would be. Like when the podcast ended, I was like, I feel relief because now I don't have to think about this as much anymore. But unfortunately, there's still just a lot of activity going on around it. So it hasn't died for me yet. It's too much. Okay. Next category will be romantic partner. Could be one-nighter. Could be alternate universe husband. Could be whatever you want.
Oh, God. Are these three real people or are these fake people?
Whatever you want. If there's a character from fiction that you're like, I have such a crush on so-and-so, even though they're not real, I'm just as in support of that as some celebrity or writer or author or whatever. I just said writer and author. Like, I think they're two different things.
All right, I'm gonna go a little off the track. This is hard, so I'm just gonna start pulling stuff up. I want Robert Benchley.
Mm-hmm. Who's Robert Benchley?
He is a writer.
Okay.
From the 1920s and 30s that I'm obsessed with.
Ooh, what does he write?
He was an essayist and a comic essayist, and I believe he won one of the very first Oscars. A short film called How to Sleep.
He's very funny, man. Wonderful.
I was obsessed with him.
I gotta look into this gentleman.
Some of the funniest essays you will ever read, like by any stretch. So I'm suddenly really bad at this, even though I was just talking about
this. This is what happens to us all. I did an interview with someone recently, and because they listened to my podcast, they were like, I'm gonna do MASH with you. And I was the worst MASH person ever. Like, everything was stunting silence and stammering. It was very ugly.
It's like you panic and forget everything that you like. Yeah, you're like, I don't
absolutely
know. What do I like? What are things? What is anything? Who am I?
What are words?
What
yes,
are words?
I agree.
What's happening? Let's see. I'm going to be boring. I'm just going to say Sherlock just because I'm really into it. And I've been rewatching it a lot recently.
Okay, so you're specifically Benedict Cumberbatching it with the Sherlock.
You know what? I'm going to specifically Benedict Cumberbatch it just
because I had a big crush on Jeremy Brett when I was like a preteen. I still was like, he's so sexy and dramatic and wonderful.
I met him.
You did?
When I was a teenager, I was so obsessed with him. In London, and instead of going out drinking, I stood in front of a theater to meet Jeremy
Brett. I would have been right next to you.
In the fog, like a maniac.
That is wonderful. I'm so glad you did it, and I assure you I would have been doing the same.
He was magic. Like he was.
That's really good to hear.
He was so, he was just like everything an actor should be.
Oh, God, that's so great to hear. That's like when I met John Guare, for anyone who's a playwright fan. He was like the dreamiest dream when I was 18 or 19. It was definitely one of those like, yes, do meet your hero sometimes kind of thing. Okay, great. So we got Robert Benchley, we got Sherlock.
Yeah, and there was a bunch of musicians, but then like I was thinking about it, and I'm like, oh, they're probably all kind of skeezy.
I know. But I do encourage you to look past that and say, like, my idealized version of blank. You know what I mean? Because it's your MASH. So if it's like the version of so-and-so that you think probably isn't real but would be, you know, fictionalized into reality in your fictional MASH future, that's totally acceptable.
Well, also, because she's not skeezy and just because she is my goddess, I'm going to put Kate Bush in there. I'm going to throw her in there as well.
Oh, I love it.
Just because I love her.
I do love Kate Bush also.
I just want to love, stand near places she's been.
Yeah. She's pretty amazing. I can get completely and totally on board with that. Okay, great. Next question is going to be, let's do it. Let's do time travel. You can visit three places in the past or future, places and times. For as long or short as you want, as an observer or as an interactor. You know what I mean?
I think about this a lot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I want to be in New York in, I believe, very middle of the 70s, even though I was technically alive then.
Yeah, it's not the same as being an adult getting to sort of experience
it. There's a bunch of stuff I want to look at.
Yeah.
I would like that a lot.
Got it.
I'd like to be in Pompeii right before the eruption just to see what was going on.
Ooh, yeah. Yes.
I was obsessed with Pompeii as a kid. I want to know what's going on there.
That's great.
And then I want to go to like 1920s New York too. I want to see what's going on there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great, great, great. Okay. And then final category, a lot of pressure. Final category. Boy. Final category is, you know what? Because you skipped out on musicians when we were talking, and I mean, obviously you ended up with Kate Bush, but we both like obviously love and respect her as a person. This is the opportunity for you to get some music in there.
Okay.
And it's not anyone you have to hang out with. It's just the old soundtrack to your life.
Sure.
Three bands or musicians that, create totally new music that is just made for you in your sort of day to day, whether it's like the way you feel when you're on the subway or the way you feel when you're outside of New York someplace, you know, being in, wading through that water.
I'm sweating now from... Okay, one, I just have to go with David Bowie off the top just because...
Great.
Lifelong obsession.
Great.
Then I'm going to go a little weird because I'm also obsessed with this band, but I just want to see what would happen.
Mm.
It would be very cheerful and kind of upbeat. I want Wings to do it. I want to see what happens with that.
Love it.
Just a lot of synth, like Linda McCartney. I just want to see.
Makes perfect sense to me.
I just want that. And then wouldn't it be nice to have somebody more contemporary that like anybody listening to this would be like, what?
Oh, please. If people don't know who Paul McCartney and David Bowie are, we're in trouble.
I think we are in trouble because who else? Like ABBA, of course. I'm a huge, yeah.
Perfect. Super contemporary.
But it's got to be, yeah. I'm going to bring it up to speed and do ABBA because kids love ABBA. Like, yeah, it's got to be like ABBA right around 1976. That's before it got rocky between them all.
Okay. I got it. 76. I have to say, that I was in Tokyo and, went up on the top of their Mori Museum, which is like, there's a sky deck and you can sort of see the entire city. And they have music piping out onto the sky deck. And ABBA was playing and it couldn't have felt more like an amazing, surreal experience. Like ABBA really put it over the top.
That's my dream.
Really put it over the top. Yeah, it was great. It was great. Okay.
Apparently in Sweden, I think it's Benny. I don't know if it's Benny or Bjorn, owns a hotel, and there's a dial on the walls of the hotel that if you turn it, ABBA music just comes piping out into your room.
Listen, I went to the ABBA Museum in Stockholm, so I will send you a picture of me because outside of it, they have the band members with holes cut out, you know, where you can stick your face in. And so I have a picture of me with my face stuck in as one of the members of ABBA. I can't wait to send that to you. I hope I don't forget. Okay. Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. I am going to, I guess we can just cut this part out because usually I would pause this recording, but I'm going to quickly do some math and reveal your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Oh my God.
Pardon the silence while that happens.
This is my future. Oh my God, this is as exciting as I thought it would be.
Oh, I'm so glad.
This is so exciting. Oh, it's like all official sounding.
Yeah, I hope you can hear the sound of it.
Abacus.
I know, it's very... Listen, I have a team of people here doing this math.
Oh, I'm assuming it. They all have like those green...
Your friend Sue is actually here. Your friend Sue is in front of a blackboard.
Sue and I will do it at the board together.
Yeah.
Oh God, all right.
Can you actually hear the sound of me like scratching on the paper? That's hilarious.
It's very mesmerizing. It's
yes, this is my meditation. Okay, well, getting close.
Oh boy, if you're listening right now, I just want to tell you that
if you've ever dreamed of this moment happening to you, it really is this good.
Oh,
so maybe someday Janet will call you and then you'll be like, it's come, it's time, my time is now. And
I had when I was doing a fundraiser for one of the episodes to send money to the Art of Elysium, I gave personalized MASH. I auctioned off personalized MASH sessions. And I have to say they were really fun. And I will also say that one of the people who bought one ended up becoming a really good friend of mine. She's now like someone I consider a close friend. We met through MASH.
It's a beautiful story.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. All right, I finished it. I don't think we're going to have to pause through that because that you said some very nice things that now I just want everyone to have to listen to. Okay, so let me start with, boy, this is pretty good. I'm not going to lie to you. Number one, I want to congratulate you for your very close friendship with Auntie Mame. I want to now. Okay, so you have a lake house. I need to advise you that it is a shack, but I feel like that could be when you think about these kind of like sweet little places in Connecticut and Vermont. I mean, to me, that seems like it's just like it might be small, but it's still like cozy, and you're right on the lake, and I think it's terrific. And if you feel like you need something a little bit crazier, you're going to be spending a lot of time in your sort of like hobby place of employment at the Rocky Horror Mansion.
Oh my God.
So kind of got that right there anyway.
Life is so great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know how often you have the occasion to perform your duties as a nurse in these various places, but rest assured you are very experienced and are bringing much joy and relief to the world.
I hope so.
So much so that you deserve a pizza party, a classic pizza party. That's the one you were really craving anyway, though they've been down and out a little bit health-wise. So pizza party at the lake house, or probably more likely pizza party at the Rocky Horror
at
Mansion.
Frank's, yes.
And I, that kind of feels like it goes in line with the groovy, time traveling into New York in the 70s that you're going to be experiencing.
Yes. Well, yes.
Coupled by the soundtrack, provided by Wings.
Oh, it's amazing already.
This is all very like just fun and adventure and
coming together.
It's a very energized MASH future, and you're sharing all of it with none other than Kate Bush.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I think you really hit it out of the park. You did a great job.
I'm so happy.
Really, really, really good MASH work. Really good MASH work. Wow, fun. I'm so glad we were able to do this. I'm sorry that we couldn't do it in person, but I'm so glad we did it. And I'm so glad I got a chance to at least meet you in person. I know I'll see you, socially the next time I'm in New York, I feel sure. But, it was good to at least get a few minutes with you when we tried to do it. And I do want to give a special shout out also to Paula and her amazing gluten-free banana bread that she made for me.
My friend Paula is your massive fan, was like, I'm going to design one food that Janet can eat.
She wrote me the most awesome JV Club MASH-ish note and made an amazing banana bread. And I can't wait to get back to New York and hang out with you guys. And I don't care what your health is. I will make it work, whether I'm coming to you with board games or meeting you out and about.
Oh, it's so exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a rock star. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, Maureen. I feel sure that many people who are listening to this already following you on Twitter. You have a very, very robust Twitter following. Your tweets are hilarious and great. And I see that you spend so much time interacting with your fans, which I think is so cool. And I wish that I was more on top of that time-wise with my own stuff. But
you're on the TV.
Sometimes on the TV. But what is there anything else that people need to know? I think that you have there's signed copies of a book coming out or just came out, right, of yours?
There's a book coming out. It's the third in a series. It's coming out on I almost said December, February 10th. It's called The Shadow Cabinet.
For those of you keeping track, that's 6 days before Maureen's and my birthday.
Exactly. So it would be a wonderful present if you're celebrating our birthday or the birthday of Kim Jong-il. It's a great way of celebrating.
All right, guys. Thank you so much, Maureen. Thank you so
much.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you next time on the podcast.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.